Hey, it's Buster Olney of the Baseball Tonight podcast. With ESPN Daily, you can wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN. It's told by the top reporters and insider on the planet. Plus, Mina Kimes does such a great job with it. The breaking news of SportsCenter with a deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought our listeners would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
So, yeah, in Italy, we have noticed that after a while, it gets to young people as well. Patient one is a super fit 38-year-old who that same week had been running a marathon, and then he reported to the hospital. He was attached to a breathing machine for 19 days. He survived, but that made it obvious that it wasn't just about weak people or people with preconditions or old people. Well, obviously, all need to be protected anyway. These cases actually end up getting everybody. I am in southern Italy. Bari is the name of the place. It's on the Adriatic Sea. It's basically the heel of the boot, just to give you an idea. It's a place that hasn't been hit hard yet by the contagion, but we're all staying inside to prevent it, of course. It's a beautiful day, actually, here. Sun is out, and there's not a cloud in the sky. It would be a perfect day for a baseball game if we could have one. It would be great to be going outside. We just cannot do that.
The coronavirus pandemic led Major League Baseball to hit pause in the United States. But in other parts of the world, change and tragedy arrived even more abruptly. Today, MLB insider Jeff Passan brings us the story of a Red Sox scout living in Italy, where baseball and life have come crashing to a halt. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, March 20th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Today, I am turning the interview mic over to ESPN senior writer Jeff Passan, who you've heard on ESPN Daily from the start. As baseball in the U.S. has been put on hold, Jeff's been in touch with his contacts across the world, including in Italy, one of the countries hit hardest by the coronavirus pandemic. Jeff connected with that source, a Red Sox scout, for a wide-ranging conversation on this moment and his personal journey in baseball. Here's Jeff.
Can you tell me your name and tell me what you do?
So my name is René Sajjadi, and I work as the European area guy for the Boston Red Sox. I run their European operations all around, and I've been doing this since the middle of 2013 for the Red Sox. Previously, I was with the Diamondbacks and the Angels.
What does that job entail?
Scouting the whole territory, whatever comes to Europe, I've got to take care of. So anything that happens here, all the amateur players, and also when international pro players come here, like in the past, Cuba used to come here quite a bit, I would have to take care of that. So I have to scout everything that moves, really.
How have you been doing your job?
I cannot go around, obviously, but even if I could, there would be nowhere to go to because all around Europe, sports have stopped. So even if I wanted to scout, aside from the fact that obviously I can't due to city regulations and so on, but even if I wanted to defy those, let's assume, I wouldn't be able to go anywhere because right now there's nobody training. Academies have stopped, and most of the planes are down too. So it's almost impossible to travel. And even if I did, there wouldn't be anywhere to travel to right now.
Where did you grow up?
All around the world. Because my mother is a diplomat, and she's also a person that goes to critical spots. She was sent in Libya when it was under the embargo. You know, there were bombs exploding. The Gaddafi regime was there. We stayed for a few years. My mother was in Afghanistan. She was in Ethiopia. She was in Ukraine when there was that big crisis with Russia. That's how it happens with certain types of diplomats.
So you're used to being in areas where it feels like the world is caving in.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of living it better than others because I've always been used to living delicate situations, let me put it that way. So I've had the training in that sense. In these situations, you really need self-discipline and you need to be careful about yourself. So it's pretty much like those situations, I guess.
How does a child of the world get into the game of baseball, which is mostly an American game?
Well, that's a very good question. I went to international schools. My school in India was an American embassy school. Lots of American kids were there at the time. So, you know, you get close to the game regardless of everything else. And I just fell in love with it. Kept following it. And when I came back to Italy after my college degree, I even played it at insignificant levels. Actually, that made me understand that obviously I had no future as a player. So I figured, you know, let's see what else is there to learn. And I started looking at it, yes, a bit from the scouting point of view, but especially from the analytical point of view. And it made me understand that there was so much more to it. There was so much more to understand. And the more I understood of it, the more I learned, the more I fell in love with it.
What's your favorite thing about baseball?
Everything. I just love everything. I love the smell of the freshly cut grass. I love the sound of the bat on the ball. I just love the strategy. I don't like the fact that there's a 5-month layoff in the offseason. That's the only thing I don't really like about it.
So what's this moment like for you then, where you know it's not just going to be months without baseball? It's going to be a lot longer.
It's not good at all. It is torture for me, but I understand that not many things are bigger than baseball, but this is one of them. And I actually really appreciated that MLB really acted fast. They didn't wait like sports federations here in Europe. And when they saw that it was dangerous to keep going, they stopped it immediately, and they took care of their own players. They took care of their own fans, especially. And they were right to do this. It was just the only thing that could be done.
Typically this time of year, in the middle of March, what are you doing?
So there would be some early bird scouting at this point of the year. Mostly, though, it would be schedule setting for the rest of the season. In Spain and in Italy, you can easily play at this time of the year. As I said, today it's 65 degrees out here. In the Northern Europe, you cannot. So there would always be something to look at this time of the year already.
When did you realize this wasn't going to be a typical March?
Well, in January. Not because I'm super smart or anything, but because obviously my mother being a diplomat, we were getting the news from Wuhan as the thing was spreading out. The virus wouldn't respect borders or anything, and it was a matter of time where it would get out, and it was going to get to Europe too and to the US eventually. So we didn't know, I personally didn't know when it was going to be troublesome, but I knew at some point it would be. At some point, some asymptomatic people would travel and he would pass it on. And guess what? That's what happened. In Italy, the virus came in from business workers who were in China, came back and spread it throughout without having any symptoms. So it took a while before we realized that, but then when we realized it, we started acting properly, but we did everything on a 7 to 10 day delay because of this. And that's why we had this big outbreak. Since that point, I gotta say, Italy has done everything right. But the problem is, again, due to the incubation period, everything is going on a delay. So the deaths keep piling up. And the only way to stop this would have been to preemptively act. But nobody in the Western world was ready for this.
I think a lot of this story can be summed up actually in 4 days worth of tweets from you. Because over these 4 days, it really told a story. You ran the gamut of frustration, of anger, of warning, of empathy. It started on March 13th. I'm going to read a tweet from you. So I went to throw away the trash at about 10:30 p.m. I live in a lively neighborhood and it's Friday night. Normally there would be a steady flow of cars, not a soul in sight. It's beautiful and creepy at the same time. When you stop to think of the reasons, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and it's exactly as it is. I mean, I live in a lively neighborhood. There's the tech university in this city just around the corner. So there are some bars, there are some clubs, and there was nobody moving. During the day, there, you might find the odd person walking the dog. You might find somebody going to a supermarket, grocery shopping, somebody going to work or coming back from work. But obviously, after 7 or 9 p.m., there would be nobody. The streets would be empty. You know, I used to have a dog many, many years ago. And after East Coast games, which typically end at about 10 p.m. East Coast time, which would be 4 a.m. here in Italy, I would walk him out. I wouldn't find anybody, but still there would be the odd car going around, even at 4 a.m. Now, going around at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. or 10:30 p.m., and not finding even the odd car is kind of creepy given my experiences, especially in this area. I don't know how long this is going to go on, but we're on this fight together. And most of Italy is coming together, and especially at night, it shows the effort they're making to fight this virus.
Coming up, more from Jeff's interview with Renee on life inside the Italian coastal city of Bari and how he's staying connected to baseball. Here's Jeff Passan walking us through more of Renee Sajati's Twitter account of the pandemic in Italy.
March 14th. The obituaries in the local newspaper in Bergamo, 120,000 residents, went from 1 to 11 pages in a matter of days. Guys, this is serious. Take it very seriously. 11 pages, Renee.
As you can see, just a month prior, the same paper had one page. That's what it's like normally. And now it's probably more than 11 pages, too, because the deaths have been increasing. They've been piling up.
March 15th, a 38-year-old with no comorbidity just died in my region. It's starting to get younger people, too. Be safe and don't underestimate it. And that same day, you retweeted a story about Matteo Malaventura. Can you tell me who he is?
Yeah, he's a professional basketball player. Well, now he just retired. He's 41, but he's a professional basketball player who had absolutely no preconditions, no pre-existing conditions, completely healthy, completely fit. He played for the national team. And, you know, we're in the hands of science and scientists. And if they can figure this out, then we'll be fine. But until then, the only thing we can do, the only thing we can practice is social distancing.
March 17th, 4 days after the first tweet that I read from you. So I went out to throw away the trash. My first time out since Friday, excluding my balcony. I spent 10 minutes in front of the gate of my building looking out. Nobody on foot, an empty bus, a pizza delivery guy on his scooter, two cars, and a police car with its lights turned off.
Yeah. So the police is going around and checking that nobody is going around if he shouldn't. And the pizza delivery guy is saving lives, obviously. And
never thought I would hear that.
No, they are. I mean, if you want to make this lighter, I should tell you that in Naples, you cannot find yeast anymore because on Saturday nights, people are making their own pizza at home. That's and everybody's doing it. So it's impossible to find yeast right now. It's you can still find flour. But, you know, if I don't have pizza once a week, I mean, that might do it. Seriously, that might do it. So, yeah, you can take away everything, but you can't take away pizza from an Italian.
What keeps you going right now?
Survival instinct, I would say. but also a desire to get back to normalcy and to normality. And I just want to get back to my life, and so does everybody else. Nobody's willing to give up.
How are you staying connected to baseball right now? Have you found yourself watching old games on YouTube, looking at highlights, doing anything to keep baseball at the forefront of your mind?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I've even done something, you know, I was reordering the files in my database, personal database, and I found some files, for example, from some clips from 2007, 2008, 2009. So I was looking at some players that even made the big leagues out of Europe that were 14, 15 or 16 at the time, and just look at how they improved. Just look at the old things that I did, my old scouting reports. We're talking about stuff from 13 years ago, and it was really, really funny. And so that's one of the things I did. And I went diving back into my memory lane. And it was funny to look, for example, at a certain Twins outfielder who now is a pretty large man, and remember him when he was a young kid.
So you were watching video of a 14 and 15 year old Max Kepler? The Minnesota Twins outfielder who is from Germany, who is the most accomplished baseball player to come out of Europe.
Yes. Even though I should say, yes, he's the most accomplished player to come out to grow up in Europe. Max Kepler is definitely the most accomplished big leaguer who was born and bred in Europe. Those videos I just stumbled upon because I was reordering my hard disk. So I was just putting order in there. So, and then I saw this folder that was labeled 2008. He was 15 at the time, being from 1993. And I just saw the videos were in there. And there was him. There was Dovydas Neverauskas as well, the Lithuanian reliever. Made the big leagues with the Pirates. And so I just looked at their videos because it was from back in the day. I didn't even remember those. There were some players that I even had almost forgotten about. I definitely forgot about my reports, and it was just fun reading them. So I'm doing this. I'm watching some old games. I have to be honest, I find old games, and I'm talking about really old games, almost more interesting than last year's games right now, just because, I don't know, it just gives, this period is giving us time to reflect on our past and study. I've also picked up The Glory of Their Times again. It's my favorite book ever, obviously. I'm just trying to keep sane and keep my head into the game. Any possible way is good.
And The Glory of Their Times, of course, is the Lawrence Ritter book that essentially talks about the early days of baseball. What's making you feel nostalgic at this point?
Regarding The Glory of Their Times, I've always loved, absolutely loved old-time baseball. And the stories tied to it. For example, there was a story about Germany Schaefer or Hermann Schaefer stealing first base just to upset the pitcher, you know, the way he stole second base and then went back to first base to upset the pitcher. That was just amazing. And all those stories just cracked me up. And I almost wish that there would be more because I love to study about the past of baseball. I love, for example, the history of baseball in general, 19th century, but especially early 20th century, Negro Leagues as well. I love to read about Hall of Famers. So it's beautiful, it's historical, it's romantic. It's not about being nostalgic, but it's just trying to get in as much as you can about baseball from any country, from any era, from any type of baseball being played. I'm just one of those guys that really just cannot get enough. So that's more of a problem with me, I guess, than being nostalgic. But I just love it all. I just wish more of it would be played, actually. But as we said, you know, there is something nice even in the withdrawal period, because when you get back to it, it just feels like you want to hug everybody and smell the grass and go around and hear the bat on the ball. And it's just, is there anything better? I don't know. because everybody's going nuts and everybody really needs baseball, let's face it. Not just Americans, believe me.
Renee, thank you so much for your time. Please stay healthy.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me. And you guys be healthy and stay safe. Stay home, guys. All of our Italian love and hugs from afar to you Americans. Take care.
That's the only story I want you to know today. I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Troy Farkas. I'll talk to you on Monday.